This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about video game mascots. When you think of a video game mascot, who's the first one that comes to mind? For most of you, it's most likely Nintendo's Italian-American plumbing hero, Mario Mario. For some of you, it could be the Pokemon Company's Pikachu, or Sega's Sonic.
Super Sonic style!
And if you're a real freak, it might even be Rareware's Mr. Pants.
It's Mr. Pants!
Video game mascots have existed as representatives of their franchises or the companies that created them since the start of the 80s. It all started when a heavily pregnant Namco gave birth to a limbless, hungry baby called Pac-Man. Well, Pac-Baby at that point. While Pac-Man started the age of video game mascots, it's as clear as day that Mario Mario was the man to really popularize video game companies having their own resident guy. For many years, there was a tireless and vicious war between Nintendo's Mario and Sega's Sonic with close to no end in sight. Thankfully, the war was declared over with the release of Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games in 2007, a move that drew mixed responses from game critics, but joyous responses from political experts. And even as that war raged on, there was another, a mascot greater than all others, a mascot in the scaled skin of a wisecracking gecko. That's right, folks, it's tail time.
Oh yeah, it's tail time. It's tail time. It's tail time!
While Crystal Dynamics may be known to some as the big brains behind the Tomb Raider series, Lara Croft was not their mascot because they didn't even have anything to do with Tomb Raider until the noughties. Instead, it was Gex the Gecko, a funny little fella that loves television, who represented the studio on their logo from 1996 and appeared in Gex and Gex Enter the Gecko. Then Crystal Dynamics got bought by Eidos Interactive at the end of 1998. Who ended up being responsible for publishing Gex 3 Deep Cover Gecko in 1999. And that was the last time that Gex was ever seen in a video game of his own again. He was removed from Crystal Dynamics' logo in 2000 and was eventually presumed dead and buried after Eidos Interactive and later Square Enix seemingly had no care for the Gecko. It's been almost 25 years since Gex was last officially seen in his own game. And while he may not have the following that mascots like Mario and Sonic have, the niche following of Gex is arguably one of the most passionate groups dedicated to a franchise that the world has ever seen. So what drives Gex heads and other fans of seemingly forgotten game mascots? How are they keeping their memories alive? Joining me today to talk about this very topic is game designer, co-host of the Oral Gex podcast, creator of Gex Week, and legal wife of Gex, Izzy Kestrel. Izzy, what's going on?
Hi, Ruby. Thank you for having me.
When did your love of Gex start?
So it goes back as far as the origin of Gex, basically. He first appeared on a console called the 3DO, which I think at the time it was retailing for like $799. It was a very expensive console, but it was touted being like the future of gaming. And my grandfather, he was a gambler, and I think he liked to take bets on, you know, anything he could. So when he heard about the underdog console, like, oh, this expensive console is going to be the future of gaming, I got to get on the ground floor of this. So, yeah. Of course, he bought one and brought home Gex, and I played it for the first time in the mid-90s.
Wow. I mean, like, I respect that. I had a slap at... Actually, is that a thing in America? First of all, pokies. Do you know what the pokies are?
Like the guy from Mario? Okay.
We call poker machines pokies here in Australia.
Okay, I love that.
And we call having a turn on the poker machine having a slap.
Okay.
So if you go and have a slap on the pokies, it means you are engaging in gambling on a horrible, horrible, dastardly machine.
I'm going to remember that.
And I am an incredibly unlucky person, or at least I think I am. Like, and maybe me thinking that I'm an unlucky person means it's probably going to happen. But I had a slap at the pokies the other day and it went badly for me.
Yeah.
But just the thrill of being there and just hitting that button, I get it. I understand it. I will never let myself fall into it, but I understand wanting to gamble on something that you think might just hit. And yeah. I understand your, was it your grandpa you said?
Yes.
Yeah. The 3DO.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think gambling kind of ran my family. Obviously, my grandpa, the patriarch of the family, kind of probably got everyone else into it. But my mom actually owned a business where she sold like billiards tables and like spas, hot tubs. And also had a small selection of slot machines. So when I was a kid, I would go to her business and I would just sit all day and I'd slap the pokey, so to speak.
There we go.
And yeah. I would lose all my tokens in the machine. And then I'd go in the back and I'd get the keys and I'd open up the machine, get all my coins back out. And I'd play again. And that probably instilled some really, really healthy habits in me growing up.
Yeah. It's like the instant satisfaction that you can't get from playing a regular gambling machine. I mean, like, that's such a good tip. Like, if you lose all your money in the pokies, just go around the back and open it up.
Just open it up. Yeah.
That makes so much sense. So you played Gex on the 3DO.
And yes.
Do you have a strong memory of that experience the first time you played a Gex game?
So the first one, it's kind of fuzzy. I didn't like the first one as much. It was really Enter the Gecko that really made my childhood. I do have this very vivid memory of sitting in my mom's car in the parking lot of an Olive Garden, reading the manual, probably because I rented the game or something. So I have a very strong association with Olive Garden and Gex now as well.
I mean, likely place for him to be.
Yeah, I think he would eat there. Yeah.
What do you think it is about Gex that kind of sets him apart from other video game mascots in your eyes?
Yeah, so he's traumatized, which maybe there are other mascots. Maybe there are other mascots that are also traumatized. We could talk about those as well. But, you know, his dad worked at NASA and he died in a rocket accident. His rocket exploded.
Yeah.
And I think that is what kind of drove Gex into his destiny of just watching TV endlessly, because he was just so distraught by his father dying and he didn't really know how to deal with it. He didn't go to therapy or anything. He's just like, I'm just going to watch TV forever. And now my friend is John Ritter from Three's Company. Like these are the people that I love. These are the people, this is my family now. I can have my own dad and like Archie Bunker or something. He probably wouldn't be a very good dad. I don't know. He's probably better TV dads.
It's such an interesting concept to kind of offer to children, is like, here's this gecko, talking gecko, great, awesome, makes references to all the TV shows you love, very cool, very nice. His dad died, and his traumatic response is an obsession with television. I mean, you clearly kind of caught on to it, but I'm sure that surely that kind of narrative might have pushed others away, right?
Yeah, that is like that little tidbit is buried in the instruction booklet, which it was a time where we actually did read those because, you know, like I said, you rent a video game, you ride home and read the booklet. But in the game, it's, you know, there's a short cutscene in the beginning of him watching TV and then getting pulled into the TV and he has to fight Rez or whatever. So it's more subtext than it is text. But I do think it's a really important fact because that is how he gets to where he is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you weren't a huge Gex 1 fan?
No.
I'd say you respect it as it started what would continue on to be a trilogy unlike any other, but
the one-liner stuck, right? Just like any of the games, like they stuck with me forever.
Totally. But it was number two that did it for you.
Yeah, number two really did it for me.
Tell me about your love and experience of Gex 2 Enter the Gecko.
Yeah. So Gex 2 is, the first game was 2D and the second game jumped into 3D. And if you had played Super Mario 64 at the time, you could probably play Gex 2 and be like, oh, these people play Mario 64. That is what they're pulling from. It's very much like kind of a hub world thing where you're like wandering around, jumping into TVs, and each TV is a different world. And I think that it just had, being in a 3D space probably, it just had more room for all the sight gags, you know, because you can only do so much in the 2D one. Like the screen size was not, the resolution was very big. There wasn't much stuff like that you could look at. But now it's like, oh, you turn a corner and there's like a funny sign on the wall that says something, or there's like, oh, there's a sign that says like, you know, don't look up or something. And there's like pianos and anvils and stuff falling from the sky in the cartoon level. Like it's just a lot of good gags that really hit for me.
I'm assuming you played Deep Cover Gecko as well. And how do you think that kind of grew from the second game?
Yeah, so my other memory of Deep Cover Gecko was, I think I was sick and I remember like taking cold medicine and playing Deep Cover Gecko. So both very strong memories.
I think that
memories.
Would heighten the
experience, right? Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, I think, you know, there's some really interesting bits in there. They kind of just elevate everything from the second game. So I think it is more of the second game and maybe better. I think it is widely preferred for a lot of people, but I don't know. There are some cool parts where he's like dressed up as Sherlock Holmes and then you like use a magnifying glass to like look at like a bear or something and then you shrink down and kill ticks or fleas or something on the bear. Just a lot of weird situations he gets into in that one. But he also has a human girlfriend in that game, which is pretty great.
Yeah, I think any
Playboy model.
I mean, I think that the trend of video game mascots having human girlfriends is really interesting. Sonic did it.
Gex did it first. Don't forget.
Gex did it first. You could say he's a trendsetter. And I think it's so interesting that Gex had these three games released, I would argue, in pretty quick succession of one another. Like between, 1996 and 1999, three Gex games were released. Like that's very impressive. But then suddenly, gone.
Yep.
For three games to come out in a series in 3 years and then for the entire series to just go completely quiet is, to me, very fascinating. And from my research, because I like to do my research before I do these things, but from my research, it kind of just seemed like after Deep Cover Gecko, neither Eidos nor Square Enix just cared about making another Gex game since 2000 to now. Why do you think that was? What do you think made Gex kind of drop off in their eyes?
There was a Gex 4, I believe, that went to pre-production, and then it kind of turned into Whiplash, which is like, I didn't play Whiplash, but it's like a rabbit and like a weasel trying to escape from like animal testing facility, which I read a little bit about it because I was researching, obviously, and I found out that PETA actually really liked the game, even though it's a game about abusing animals, because it it's kind of their whole shtick, actually, where, like, you know, they made some web games in the past where it's like, you know, oh, murder the Pokemon or something. Like,
oh,
just
my God,
really,
yeah, the
graphic.
The clone games. Yeah.
Yeah. Horrifying. And it's like, I kind of wonder if Whiplash kind of inspired them to do that. Because shortly after Whiplash came out, they started making their own games, which I thought was very interesting. But yeah, there was an attempt, right? But then I think they lost a lot of staff to, like, people went to Naughty Dog, and just the people that worked in Gex kind of went their separate ways. And I think after that, you know, there was like a couple cameos in like Hot Shots Golf 2 and Mad Dash Racing. He was also in a cell phone game called Lara Croft's Poker Party. So you can play poker with Lara Croft as Gex, which is pretty great. There's also...
That kind of rocks.
There's a lot of great cameos from other Eidos properties, too. You can play as, like, is it Agent Denton from Deus Ex?
Yeah.
JC Denton. There's, yeah, Hitman's in there. Agent 47's in there. It's a star-studded cast. Yeah, I think that one came out in 2007, and then he's just kind of been gone since, other than having these little cameos. And I think it's just that his humor, even at the time, it felt like it was like a decade behind what people were watching. It's like he wasn't referencing like 90s shows. He's referencing things from the 80s. It was like obviously Dana Gould, the voice actor of Gex. It was just him doing jokes about stuff that he liked, which is very funny. But I don't know if that really holds up in the 2000s.
I just think there's something so bizarre about, like, in the best way possible. And I think you see it in a lot of indie stuff coming out. You see more of an openness to bizarre concepts, like a Gecko referencing shows from the 80s, despite them not being things that anybody is currently watching. Like, it seems like something you'd not really see from a quote-unquote bigger studio now.
Yeah.
Which bums me out, honestly. It kind of feels like it's in the same breath as studios just not really taking a chance on their funny little shit anymore. Do you think Tomb Raider was just like a safer bet for Crystal Dynamics?
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. And I wish that they would kind of reopen that. I do think that, you know, they have Power Washer Simulator DLC for Tomb Raider. Why not Gex too? Like, there's plenty of, you could go to the Gex cave.
Especially since we now know, thanks to the announcement of the Gex trilogy being released through Limited Run, Square Enix owns Gex.
That is my understanding.
They sold Crystal Dynamics. They sold Crystal Dynamics and they kept Gex, which I find so fascinating. Because they could have kept Tomb Raider and they decided to keep Gex. So they could put Gex wherever they wanted.
They could. They could put him in Kingdom Hearts, but they won't because they're cowards.
They absolutely won't. I feel like Disney would not respect Gex.
No, they wouldn't. Gex probably loves Disney. Gex probably watches Marvel movies. Like, it just makes sense.
Oh my God, he absolutely would. I think Gex is a prime time consumer. I think he'd watch everything for the sake of, you know, filling his mind up with media. I like
pop culture. Yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of like if Roger Ebert was a lizard, which I kind of respect. I think
they actually
put
that in the back of one of the boxes.
I need to stop bringing up Roger Ebert. I've ruined him 2 episodes now. But I found it really interesting that Square Enix decided to keep Gex when they sold off Crystal Dynamics, because it just was crazy to me. But the very interesting thing with Limited Run Games as well is the way they do their re-releases is it's all through their Carbon engine, which quite a few people have problems with. What's your take? Do you think that Limited Run is going to do the original Gex games justice?
Yeah, so my understanding is that they are going to... Well, I've got mixed messages because I was able to have an interview with Dana Gould within the past year. So that was pretty cool. He let slip that they were having him record some stuff for the new trilogy. I don't know what that means. I didn't pry any further. Maybe that's just like menu stuff. Like, you know, you click start and it's like he says it's tail time. Right? Like there's a new, like, we're starting the game. Something new for Gex to say. That's more clever than that. But from my understanding from Limited Run, I think they're going to print the games as they were and not try to edit any of the more problematic stuff out. They're just kind of put it all wholesale and be like, oh, I don't know if they'll put a disclaimer in front of it. Like, hey, this is from a different time. There might be some like racist accents or So it sounds fine. I don't know a lot of details about the Carbon Engine or like what it's capable of, but I'm hoping they do it justice. And I'm hoping that they take the time to put in some like museum features and have some like material, right? Like, I'd love to see pictures of Dana in the recording booth and like things like that instead of just, or like concept art, you know, it'd be really cool.
I think the best way they could do it is probably in the same way that they did, that Xbox did Rare Replay. And having all those games available, which is very cool. But then on top of that, having a whole area of the software dedicated to showing like the art of the games and behind the scenes of the games and interviews with people and concept art and just so much deep dive into like how Rare made all this shit. And to me, that's like the perfect way to do a re-release or remaster of any kind of series, because I think the getting to play those games in my eyes is one thing, but getting to find out everything about them and what made them quote unquote special enough to have a re-release and all that, I think is so fascinating, right?
Yeah. Magazine ads and things like that would be also really critical. They got to have the manual in there so you know that his dad died and that's why he is the way it is, because otherwise that's just going to be lost in this generation.
Absolutely. I mean, like, how would people know? They wouldn't know. Oh my God. Dana Gould. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So it was a series of connections and kind of playing tag through email and various messaging systems. But I did manage to finally track the man down and get to talk to him for an upcoming project I'm working on that I cannot talk about just yet. But he was super sweet. And I heard a lot of just like mixed things about his relationship to Gex at this point. Like, I've heard people say like, oh, like he's not proud of it. He wishes he hadn't done it, or like he's like, you know, whatever. But I don't know if that was like a period that he went through. I'm sure that's something that people go through. They're all, you know, their most popular work. If you go look up his Wikipedia page under notable works, it says it lists Gex and The Simpsons, but Gex is first actually above The Simpsons under notable works. So definitely very, very much associated with Gex. But when I talked to him, he was very positive about it. He was like, I had a great time doing it. Like, they really let me kind of like do my own thing, right? Like, write my own jokes, say whatever I want to say for the most part. For the most part, he did tell me there were some things he couldn't say. They were like, no, we have to cut that. which is good. But he says that he still has people come to him. He does like stand-up comedy shows, and he still has people come up to him once every couple weeks with a Gex cartridge or a CD-ROM or something and be like, hey, can you sign this? And it's like, it has a huge legacy that continues on.
It really does.
Yeah.
And like, I respect that, because I'm sure there are plenty of people that have done like voice acting who look back at some of their work and like hate it. And like, that's fine. But I think that it's also so fine to give it a few years and realize actually I really enjoyed doing that. And it may be dorky or cringe at the time in between, but now it's actually quite sick.
And it's come back around.
Gex rocks. And I think for me, at least, obviously the ending of Gex fronted games was probably a huge thing, but for me, seeing Gex no longer be a part of the Crystal Dynamics logo, I felt like was the end.
Heartbreaking.
And I think it's probably them wanting to be like, we make stuff other than Gex games. But as well, I think another big part of it is the modernization and minimalization of video game logos over time. Mm-hmm. Do you think that how video game logos have kind of been forced into simplification does have an effect on characters like Gex and like the kind of spotlighting of video game mascots?
I think it's kind of the reverse almost, where these companies want to be taken seriously, right? They want to be like, we make art. We make things that we want to be like movies. We want to make big pictures that are like nominated for awards. And, you know, they make stuff like Tomb Raider reboots that are a lot more gritty and a lot more like serious. And I just don't think that they have that kind of like lackadaisical, like, oh, we're having fun over here. We're just like a couple of guys in a garage making gecks, making fun video games. It's all like very serious. And also they grow up and they become dads and they're like, I want to make games about that being dads and not games about murdering my dad, I guess, in a rocket explosion. But I think about like Naughty Dog, right? There's a very old logo. Their oldest logo is like, you know, like a cool dog wearing sunglasses. And then there's like one you could like put a code, I think, in a game and it would show like a topless woman. And it's like, we've come so far away from that now. It's like, no, Naughty Dog does like The Last of Us, like the most emotionally like pull your heartstrings game on the market that has been adapted into like an HBO miniseries. They don't make stuff like that. They don't have topless women on their logo anymore. It's a shame.
It's crazy. Like, it's funny you mention Naughty Dog, because not only do I wish they kept that original logo, because that shit was awesome. And like, I'm very interested in video game company logos. And I think seeing how they've changed over time to just be so boring is heartbreaking. And Naughty Dog's a really fine example of that. But the thing with Naughty Dog as well is they too had a video game mascot in Crash Bandicoot.
That's right.
And Crash Bandicoot was their guy. You would start up a Crash Bandicoot game and it would come up with the was it like the Naughty Dog box animation?
Right. And you'd like spin like into it. Yeah.
It was crazy. And while doing my research and writing an intro for this, which then got very edited because I went on a tangent.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Do you think the culture of acquisitions and of mergers and of all this kind of corporate hubbub could potentially have an effect on video game mascots and how they represent video game companies?
Absolutely. I feel like that's the whole point of a mascot, right, is to represent something. And if there's not like a really strong brand at the center of, you know, what the company, like, then why have a mascot? Like, what good did they do? You think about, even in the 90s, we had a lot more like kind of like advert gaming sort of stuff happening with like Chester Cheetah Goes Wild or whatever, driving across America, or like Pepsi Cool Man. Spot, Pepsi Man. That's a great one. Yeah. Like, there's, you know, you don't see stuff like that anymore either, because I think brands have largely just kind of like pulled away from the mascot thing.
Yeah. It's interesting because not all of them have. Like, Nintendo's still got Mario. And Sega still has Sonic. And even within Nintendo, not just Mario, you've got Kirby representing HAL Laboratories, which is just, it's a company in Nintendo. And it's kind of interesting to see which video game mascots have continued to thrive. Why do you think those ones have?
I think it's just the scale, you know, just like they had enough sales and games that are good and well reviewed, and just like I think some of them are going to soldier on, but like there's a lot that just get kind of left to the wayside because we got to push for these again, like moving towards like more of these gritty grimdark games like Last of Us or something. Joel and Ellie don't make as good of like a character to put on the logo, right? That's just to kind of naturally like they pull away from characters as you go more into that drama route.
Yeah. Well, as well, I mean, like, I feel like a big thing with video game mascots is bringing them all together and these video game mascot brawlers, such as Smash Bros. And the less loved PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, but it did exist. Yeah. And I feel like Smash Bros. Is on another level entirely. That's just, I feel like mascot culture is very different in Japan as well, where it's a lot more celebrated.
They have a lot like, more of them, I feel like.
They do. They have so many. Yeah. Do you follow Mondo Mascots on Twitter? I go nuts for Mondo Mascots. Learning that like almost every single company has their own mascot, very exciting to me. I find a new one every day and it brings me joy. Like even like the smallest family run establishments having their own mascot. I'm like, that's delightful.
That's the world we could live in. Internationally, but we just don't for some reason. I don't know why.
It's a shame.
Worse off for it.
It's truly a shame. I feel like it's this desire for things to be serious all the time, which bums me out. I think things should be more fun, you know?
Yeah.
Why not?
I agree.
But the thing with brawlers is it's interesting to see how Smash Brothers bears compared to like something like PlayStation All-Stars Brawlers because, the name sucks. Can I just say that? PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale sounds like an SEO headline. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I hate it. But that game didn't do as well as Smash Bros, obviously. But I feel like it's because I feel like Sony doesn't have that whimsy. You know what I mean?
The brand wasn't as strong.
Yeah. And like, sure, it's funny to see Kratos in a battle against Parappa the Rapper. Like, that's funny. But it didn't work. And I don't think it's going to work in the future because I don't think that their cartoonish and delightful characters are going to last as long in their library as the more serious characters, which is such a shame.
Yeah.
Have you seen any kind of recent video game characters that you think could be good video game mascots to represent the company that they come from?
I think the Moogle and the Chocobo and stuff like are very iconic and they really do represent the games or the series that they're from very well. I think it's a lot harder for that to break out. Like if it kind of is born from the game or the series and like takes place in that world, it's harder for it to like escalate out and be like, oh, we're just representing the company now. Like I think Mario sort of is like one of the things I think of that did that because Nintendo wasn't always personified by Mario and Sega. You did research on this. Maybe you have a better answer than me. I feel like Sega, when they were kind of coming up, they wanted Sonic to be a mascot. Like they were intending like, we need to get, you know, our ringer in here. So it's going to be Sonic the Hedgehog. So before his first game even came out, they were like, this is our guy, you know?
And it was a response to Mario. Like it was a direct response to Mario because they needed something to kind of push him ahead. And they chose Sonic. And like Sonic is still going strong, like easily. And anytime I see people go like, oh, like Sonic fell off, wah, wah, wah. I'm like, you talk to any Sonic fan.
Yeah.
And you'll wish you never said that. And I say that as a fan of Sonic myself.
Oh, yeah. I had a wall of Sonic stuff when I was a kid. I was a big Sonic fan.
I don't know how to describe it. To me, like Mario is very kind and squeaky clean. Sonic is cool, but is still just a kid. Gex is your uncle that you talk about TV shows to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean that in the best way.
In the 90s, Sonic was kind of positioned as like the bad boy, right? He's like way past cool and I got attitude. Like I remember all the cool t-shirts I never had. I wanted from the magazines, like how cool and how much attitude Sonic has. But Gex, they just kind of tried to push it a little bit further, and I think maybe they went too far, and that's why he's so beautiful and unique now, because no one else is going to go that far again.
Yeah, they were like, okay, now Gex is James Bond. It's like,
he's
okay.
He's too edgy.
All right. Yeah. Speaking of Gex, as we come back to Gex, as we cycle in the natural cycle back to Gex,
mm-hmm.
You got married to Gex. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So another, I would say another nail in the coffin. It's one of those things that, like, sad for the wider kind of representation of Gex and his legacy, but good for the public. There was once a statue, a life-size statue of Gex and his Enter the Gecko era, like, secret agent tuxedo. It existed in the Crystal Dynamics headquarters. It used to be at their front doors, obviously, because he was their mascot. Of they course. Wanted him displayed proudly in front of their offices. But then at some point, it got shuffled around and moved around. And there's a picture in Gex Wiki. The last known picture of him prior to me seeing him was in some nasty back room, just like a dirty, dusty, like, storage closet. Him just sitting there, around a bunch of broken down boxes. So he was just kind of fading into obscurity. And as I found out about the statue, I was like, well, I need to go and wear my wedding dress and get a picture with it. Yeah. He's wearing a tuxedo. Like, it's meant to be.
Exactly. It's destiny.
I tried my best for a long time to make some connections and try to get in with Crystal Dynamics people to get into HQ and find that statue and get a picture with it. And I struggled. I wasn't making it happen. And then, almost like a miracle, like a sign, I randomly came across this Medium article that, I don't know, like a student or someone wrote, reporting that the Gex statue was sold at auction. I guess it changed hands to, like, some Microsoft executive, and then it was sold at auction for $2,000, which doesn't seem like very much.
It's not that much.
No. To the owner of Retro Respawn, which is a gaming store in Arleta, California. So it's a very tiny store. It's a big statue. It does take up quite a bit of space, yeah. But it's there. And I went for a work retreat thing to California earlier this year, and it happened to be, I don't know, like an hour or two away from the store. So I'm like, all right, the last day of my trip, I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to take a lift to this store. It's going to take me like 2 hours there. I got a flight. And 2 hours after that, I got to be very, very conscious of my time. But I planned it all out. I ran over there, got to the store. There was a bouquet, a flower shop right across the street from it. So I'm like, that's perfect. I'm wearing my wedding dress already. I went in there. I asked this very kind man to make me a bouquet, and he said, congratulations. I'm like, thank you. And I went out and I went into the store and got my pictures taken with the statue. The rest is history. Yeah.
That is beautiful. That it feels like a Vegas wedding.
Yeah.
It seems very much.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, fast paced expression of love. And I think that's beautiful. And you also do Gex Week, which you started, was it 3 years ago?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And as part of Gex Week, you've got the Gex Jam, where you get people to make their own Gex fan games or Gex-inspired fan games. And you're a game designer yourself. Do you feel like when it comes to your approach to game development, you're inspired by your love for Gex?
Absolutely. I think that something Gex and I have in common is, like, pop culture is fun, and, like, making stupid references is fun. We've done Gex Week for 3 years now and Gex Jam for 2 of those years. And the game I made last year was Gexfeld, which is a mashup of Gex and Seinfeld. So it's just like, let's just make him make a bunch of stupid Seinfeld jokes. And I think it's a ripe vein for comedy that you don't see as often anymore in games. And it's just... It gets the creative juices flowing, you know. It's like I can riff on Seinfeld, like coming up with a new IP and trying to, like, come up with all the things that these characters are gonna say. That's hard, but having Gex say some stuff about, like, you know, he's thirsty, he's hungry for. I've never watched Seinfeld, actually. So I don't really know what they say in that show, but I asked Amelia, my co-host in Oral Gex, and she was an expert, and she was like, oh yeah, say some stuff about like he's thirsty because he wants pretzels, or he's thirsty because he ate pretzels. I don't know. Something like that.
It makes sense, because I feel like if you tip the scales so much so, like, you know so much about Gex, and you love Gex so much, and then you know so little about Seinfeld, and you don't really care for it.
Yeah.
I feel like that the scales are so tipped there that they almost just go equal again.
Well,
they
the
balance
thing that
each
was,
other out.
The thing that, like, fascinated me so much about Gex as a child, I think, is that I didn't know what he was saying most of the time. He was saying a bunch of stuff about shows that I had never seen, movies I had never watched. And I do occasionally, I've watched more movies like in the last couple of years, and I just like go and look for like, oh, what are the classic movies that everyone needs to watch? And like, I watched Dirty Dancing on an Airplane recently, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, I'll hear someone say something like, oh, that's Gex said that, you know, it's like, that's the thing that Gex says. And I think that's fun too. Like having this like childlike wonder of like, I don't really know what he's saying. I don't really know what any of this means. I don't know what it's from, but it has the cadence of a joke.
Yeah.
So I think it's funny, and I'm going to say it at the playground anyway.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Izzy, thank you so, so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to plug? Where can we find you?
Yeah. So you can find everything that I've done, including Gexfeld, at isnaut.com, isnaut.com. I'm currently unemployed because I was laid off in December, which is probably a recurring theme for a lot of game developers right now. So if you need designer engineering help, please let me know. I would be happy to have employment. But otherwise, you can check out my website, follow me. I'm isnaut on most things. So Twitter, Blue Sky, whatever, co-host. I like to post about Gex.
Delightful. Thank you once again for joining me on the show today. It's been great having a chat.
Thank you. Wonderful.
And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon. If you support us at the silver tier and above, you can get access to our bonus episodes. In this week's bonus episode, we're rating mascots based on how they'd react if they hit you with their car. Here's a sneak peek. Bubsy. I think Bubsy's full of rage.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
He'd get mad at you for being in front of his car in the first place.
I think he'd back up too. I think he'd make sure he finished the job.
Yeah. He'd go past and then he'd go back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He wants you and anybody who thinks about crossing the road while Bubsy's around to be dead.
Yeah. I agree.
And for that, I'm kind of inclined to give him a 5. I think it's brave.
It's brave.
And hey, if you really like what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, all the Twitter and threads and whatever, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in. And as Mr. Pants would say, bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.